Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm Shisada Kono Kamada, and I am joined again tonight by PLAN. A Merry Christmas to all of you. I love wishing people a Merry Christmas, not because it's a Christian holiday, but because it's an opportunity to see the Christ in others. And I think that it's something that is given to us every year at this time, and it's maybe encoded and we don't realize what's really going on when we talk about Christmas, but that's what sits underneath it. And so I spoke this week on, I think it was our Facebook page, about, you know, taking the opportunity at this time of year when we're thinking of Christmas to really see past the story of everybody, to see past, you know, that personality of each individual, and to see the God within each one of them, and to take the time this time of year to celebrate that in all of them. Certainly, this is something we can do every day, but it's a beautiful opportunity to bring that little bit of teaching forward for people this time of year. So Merry Christmas. I hope you all had a beautiful day yesterday, and we are pleased to be with you again tonight, and we will be again live next week, same time, even though it'll be New Year's Day, yeah? Or the day after?
Day after.
Okay, good. So hopefully you can all join in with us then. Let's see. I don't know if there was anything really specific we needed to start with this week. Should I just start talking? What are we going to do?
Well, first let's do the protection.
It's so funny. It's like every time it just completely goes by me. Thank you for that. See, if I didn't have her, what would I do? Beautiful. Okay, everybody, take a nice deep breath. Call yourself forward. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us listening tonight. I ask that these tubes of light be brought down to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. PLAN and I place ourselves in service to this group tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. It was actually quite funny, because when I called Michael in, you know, the energies have been really crazy. And I asked Michael to cut everything away, and he gave me a look like, whew. Like, wow, there's a lot to do tonight. So if you're one of those people who has been sitting and struggling with the energies, you know, you are not alone. It is nasty. There's another wave moving through right now, and it's just, it's really a kicker. Again, I will remind you, it is only energy. Allow it to just move through. You know, the thing that people don't understand, I don't even know how you really come into the understanding other than it just kind of seeds itself inside of you, is that, you know, you signed up to come to be of service, and you're going to be of service whether you are conscious of it or not. Right. It was an understanding that I came into a long time ago. I actually had this thing of, you know, I have to, what is it I'm supposed to be here to do? Like, what's my mission, right? Now, certainly we all have a mission that we can propel in this lifetime. But just being here, you know, you're on your mission, right? And I came into that understanding. It's like, oh my gosh, like, I don't have to do anything. And I realized that just me being here was fulfilling why I came. You know, I came to hold light and anchor light into the planet and for humanity, you know, and that was why I was here. It's like, oh, millions and millions of years. And you probably spent how many lifetimes thinking you weren't, you know, accomplishing what you came to accomplish, but duh, you've been doing it the whole time. It's like, just be who you are, right? And that's beautiful. So you all are doing that. Now, you have to also understand that what is being required of light workers at this time is, as these energies come in, and they are coming in so strong, and they're coming in because it's time to bring all that discordant energy really to the surface. Now, the reason it has to come to the surface, if we look at it from the perspective of how this reality is created in polarization, we can see that the collective unconscious, right, is the stuff that's coming up now, because collectively we've stuffed a whole bunch. And now we can take it to the personal level. And if you look at your own work that you are doing, you can look and see where things in your own unconscious are coming forward in you doing your own processing work. Well, you know, you're not alone. You're one of the collective. So when you get further along in your work and far enough along in the dissolution process, you actually begin, it stops being about the individual for you. It's not personal anymore. And then what you start to witness is these things that you move through in your life, they're functioning as part of the collective. And you start to see it on a collective level. So you stop seeing it as a personal thing, and now it's a collective thing. So this is what's happening. We have all this stuff that the collective has just pushed into the recesses of the collective unconscious. And now it has to come up, right? It's all this discordant energy. And in order, remember, you know, you can't kind of push that aside and then just focus here on the positive side and deny the negative side, because as we do that, we will hold the whole paradigm, you know, in place. So in order to transcend it, we have to see all of it, right? So it's like in your own work, when you go into a process and you go in deep enough, you start to see what's laying underneath the issue that you're currently looking at, right? The beliefs that are underneath it. There's an unmet need that sits there at the very bottom. And you get down and you can start to witness what it is. And how that unmet need led to a desire for something, right? And then that desire led you to function in a certain way. And it also gave you an opportunity to see in another person what you refuse to see in yourself, right? And then we judge the other person, and we can justify our behaviors because it's all going to support the belief that we hold about ourselves consciously. And so now collectively, this is what's happening. We all have to witness this stuff. Well, as a light bearer, right? And a light bearer would be anybody who can sit in the space of the heart, right? Because that is the Christ. And that's where you carry your light, and you can be very effective on the planet in moving that light out into the masses. These energies are coming through, and you know you're here to transmute it, right? So again, you may not be aware that you're doing it, but that is why many of us are here. We're doing collective transmutation work on the planet, and it is incredibly draining. So for those of you who have been just physically exhausted for the last month, but especially the last 2 or 3 weeks, that's why, you know, you are doing work on levels that you can't even comprehend right now. And just be easy on yourself, you know, recognize that if you just feel tired and there's no, you know, obviously from a personal standpoint, you're going to want to look and see, why do I feel so tired? Don't engage in that. You don't need to. Just recognize that the body's tired and go take a nap, you know, go to bed early, get up later if you can afford to do it, however that works for you. But take it easy, you know, there's no one saying you have to do anything different. You know, call in sick for a day. That's what those sick days are for, right? So just be aware you are working very hard right now. And, you know, even if nothing else seems to be happening in the world, but you're just, if you could just stay centered right now in the middle of all of the chaos and just everything that's moving, then you are being of huge benefit to humanity. So hopefully that's a nice positive note to start out. I mean, because it's been rough. I know people are really, really struggling. And I'm a little sheltered from the masses. I'm not, you know, this is what I do. And so I'm not out in the public a lot. You know, I don't go to work where I'm having to deal with people. And, you know, I'm not like in a retail environment where you're really dealing with the public, that kind of a thing. And the people that I know who are in those kinds of jobs are just seeing just the craziest behavior out there. I mean, really, like people just flying off the handle at nothing. And so this is, yeah, this is exactly what's happening. People are just, everything is going to be a trigger for people now. We're really seeing this. And it's going to be very strong for the next, definitely the next week or so, and maybe a little more than that. So yeah. You're laughing. What do you have to say to that?
Just hang in there.
Just hang in there. All right. So maybe this is a good opportunity. We'll move into something. I had this beautiful chance to respond to a comment someone made on our Facebook page. And I love it when people make comments because, you know, it's one of those things like my job is not to necessarily to give people the warm fuzzy all the time. Sometimes my job is to point out where people are falling short in something they can see. And so I'll use this as an example. On our Facebook page, I think, PLN, you were the one who posted that, weren't you?
Yeah. I did, okay. Yeah.
So I'll read this actual posting to you because it's beautiful. So let me read this to you. It was a quote from Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And it says, "Divine love is the rarest thing in the world. He who can love God as a devoted wife loves her husband attains to divine love. Pure love is difficult to acquire. In pure love, the whole heart and soul must be absorbed in God. Then will come ecstasy. In ecstasy, a man remains dumb with wonder. In divine love, one entirely forgets the external world with all its charms and attractions. Even one's own body, which is so dear to one, is easily forgotten. In ecstasy, the whole mind remains absolutely fixed upon the Supreme. Those who are mere scholars and have not attained divine love confound the minds of others." So we had a dear member of our Shambhala Center group chime in on this. And this is beautiful, and I'm going somewhere with this. But let me just read to you just the response. And the response, this was a beautiful response. The person said, "I only have a problem with the quote-unquote maleness of this attitude. Love God as a devoted wife loves her husband. That is the problem with the Indian way of thinking. The woman has to be loving and obedient. How about loving God like, quote, a lover deep in love? Sorry, had to get it out there. And it's a beautiful comment. And so taken, now remember, when we're looking at things like this, we're looking from multiple vantage points, right? And what serves in one reality does not necessarily serve in another. So if it makes sense for me to do so, I'll read my reply, if I can. It's a little far away from me. I don't have my glasses. Okay. My reply was, thank you for expressing your viewpoint here. It is well taken, and I do agree that within the traditional Indian culture, the concept of quote-unquote devoted wife has not been an empowering one for women. This presented, now here's the point, this presented itself to you as a wonderful means of allowing you to see something deeper about your beliefs. Your own history has served to color the way you perceived this piece of writing. It is the perfect example of what we call the superimposition of the unreal upon the real. Now, you'll remember this if you've been with us from the beginning, because we definitely covered this, maybe show 2 or 3. Okay, so this is a beautiful example of that. For someone without your background, and this person does have a background in Indian culture, okay? So for someone without your background, the quote is taken very differently. Looking past any religious or cultural set of standards and only reading the words, I see it as a beautiful compliment to the woman who experiences true devotion toward her husband. The writer even describes this devoted woman as divine in her love for her mate. One of the greatest freedoms attained through the work we do at SCSA is the ability to see something for the beauty of what it is rather than the discordance of what we always perceived it to be. To have the eyes to see and ears to hear is a precious God-given gift which has to be freed from the constriction of the personal self and its matrix of worldly beliefs. So to go back, this is a really good opportunity for me to use this as a teaching tool, because is it true that because this particular person has a background in that culture, is the comment true, you know? And we can look at it and say, well, sure. I mean, if you're familiar with traditional Indian culture, I mean, I don't know if they do this anymore, but traditionally, if the husband predeceased the wife, when they had the funeral pyre for the husband, the wife was expected to throw herself on it. She's laughing. I don't find it funny myself. But peeling it finds that hysterical. It's ridiculous. I mean, imagine. Imagine. And that was the mark of your devotion. So for this person who responded, of course, from that place, her response makes perfect sense, right? Of course. But our job as seekers, right, is to start to see past that. Because what happened is that the experience that this person carries into anything that is being read, right, is actually coloring the way the person perceives it. And so you actually don't get it. It's like it is the snake and the adept, right? It's the adept who sees the snake and has a heart attack and keels over, and it's just a rope. And in this example, it's the same thing. You know, this particular, now of course underneath it there's a picture, right? And the picture is of Sri Ramakrishna. So it's a male, Indian male. Okay. So of course that's going to add to the story, right? Now, if you didn't have a picture, you had no idea who that person was, and you had no idea that if it was male or female, now you're going to view it with a different lens, right? Just automatically. But as soon as that picture popped up there and you see this guy like levitating over a lotus flower, right? Now you have this concept, oh, traditional male dominated, you know, East Indian culture, and the men are the only ones like allowed to kind of, you know, go into that level of being a seeker. It's not the woman's place to do that, right? And certainly that's not where we sit here in this country, and that's just not where most of us sit at this time anyway. But in the experience that this person carries in, what gets lost is the truth that sits there, right? So it is the superimposition. The person took the pictures of the past that we're going to call memories, right? And pictures of the past would be memories of books that have been read, personal experience, you know, in your own like life or experience and witnessing lives of others. And all of that gets carried forward. And then when the words come and there was something in there that got triggered, and most likely for this person, it's kind of laid out for us. It was the concept of a devoted wife. What is it to be a devoted wife, right? Now, the concept that's getting carried forward is this thing that you're devoted, meaning, you know, you could be with the worst man in the world, but it's your job to be, right, the good little wife, the wife who's going to cook him his meals and do his laundry and put his slippers on for him when he comes home and takes his shoes off. And, you know, that whole kind of, for us in this country, more that 50s mentality, right? Yeah. The I Love Lucy kind of thing. Right. Or Leave It to Beaver or whatever. And what we miss is what he's really saying. Divine love is the rarest thing in the world. And he who can love God as a devoted wife loves her husband, attains to divine love. Now, what's he really saying there? It's beautiful. Yeah. Because the devoted wife who loves her husband from that place is loving from the divine. Yeah. Okay. And that's the thing that he's asking us to really look at. You know, that's the level it takes. If you're in divine love with your husband, right, you love the essence of the man. And when the personal self presents to you, you may not agree with the actions that are taking place, but you love and are devoted to the essence. Yeah, the Christ that is right there in front of you at all times. And that's what Ramakrishna is pointing to here, which is just beautiful. It's really, really beautiful. But this is a great opportunity to really look at that and break it down and then see how it's so easy to carry our own experience in and then make the projection that that's what, you know, this guy's supposed to be like a holy man, and why would he say that? Like, it's so off. You know, and really what he's saying isn't off at all. It's beautiful, you know. So pay attention. Here's the lesson in the whole thing. Pay attention. When you read something like that and you find that little thing inside of you that goes off when you read a couple words and you find yourself going, oh, I don't think so, or just having that little twitch that comes, that, ooh, right? That's it. You're staring at it. You're staring at the belief that just got challenged that you are polarized over. You're holding yourself as one side. You're holding it as a good, bad scenario, first of all. You're holding yourself as being on the good side of the good, bad. And you're holding the other side as being bad. And you can't see yourself in the other. Okay. And so you get repulsed by it. And so as soon as you see it and as soon as you feel it, that's like God, you know, waving his arms in front of you saying, pay attention, right? That's like one of the most precious things is when you do this work and you come into that understanding that for as much of a trap as the whole thing is, it's giving you the key to the cage every single time something comes up. It truly is. The question is, when do you stop running away from it? You know, when will you stop running away from it? Because that's what you're doing. Oh, it may feel like it's something different, like you're taking a stand, right? Taking a stand for something positive. But that's not what's really going on here. What's going on is there's something that needs to be looked at and you don't want to look at it. Because in your world, it says something about you if you look at it. So in this particular example, if you're holding this concept of what the word devotion means, let's say, and you really are standing on one side of it, like there's a side of it you're afraid to witness is that could be me. You know, I could kind of be that. And I promise you, if you look closely enough, you'll find that in yourself somewhere, right? Now, it may not come in the context of being devoted as a wife to a husband. Maybe it's being devoted as a friend, or maybe it's being devoted as a daughter or a son, right? Or something like that. But I promise you, if you look closely enough, you will find it someplace. And when you find it, even if it's a little tiny speck, you have to own it, because how do you not own it? And then once you own it, now you can see, oh my gosh, like, look at that. I am both, right? I'm both. But beyond that, I'm neither of them, because the self with a capital S, you know, can't be restricted to any of that at all, certainly. And then there's the point of true transmutation, you know, when we see ourselves as both and we own it. And that's such a key point. People think that they're going to go through this work and not have to, you know, it's an escape for people. That's why I always say, you know, you come to this work on your knees. I mean, you literally have to be to the point where you are willing to look at the most painful parts of yourself and be honest about what you're seeing, to be honest about seeing how you've been unloving, how you've been cruel, you know, how you've been manipulative and controlling, and how you have, you know, created situations that you set them up just to work in your favor at the expense of others. You have to be willing to see that. If you are not willing to see that, you are not ready for this work. You just aren't. And there will come a time where you will be. You know, for most people, it's because you have to walk through, you know, hell before you get to that point, you know, where you end up on your knees saying, I can't do it. I just can't do it anymore. And then, you know, grace is a beautiful thing, and it kind of opens a window, and you're able to walk through. Now, at some point, these things that are so painful become quite funny, right? And you just laugh at you know, how the personal self reacts to certain things, because it's all just so ridiculous. Really. It really is just ridiculous. But it takes a level of surrender that is incredibly difficult to walk through in the beginning. You know, the ego is very, very good at protecting itself. And it's worked so hard to create the reality that that you're experiencing. And it, you know, it's like it is very primal. And the if you look at an animal that's being threatened with death, it will do everything in its power to stop it, right? It's not like an animal just lays down and is like, oh, fine, go ahead and just kill me, right? It's just, it just doesn't happen that way. And your own body is the same way. You know, it fights the concept of death because it sees it as some kind of an ending point. And it's scary, you know? It's just scary. And you have to be very courageous to do this work. I mean, I say this to my students all the time. I must have said it to you. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And they don't believe me until some point. You know, I was sitting with someone. I can't remember when it actually came up, but in the last probably 3 months, you know, on several occasions, he has looked at me and been like, "Wow, this work is really hard." I'm like, yes, it is. It really is. But then again, it's really not. Yeah. Because as soon as there's enough detachment there, then it's not, you know, then it's just the objective observer is the one who's really just watching and can report on what's happening in the personal self without any attachment to that story at all. And then at that point, it's kind of funny, you know, because it stops being so personal. And when we take it personally, of course, we're always, you know, offended and all that. So it's like part of my job is to offend people. So, you know, and that may be what happened here. You know, maybe my response was offensive. Good. I'm glad. Let it be offensive and take that as your opportunity to look deeper. Why was it offensive? You know, why did you feel taken aback? Oh my gosh, like, you know, there was an expectation most likely when the response was given that someone would agree. Well, I did agree to a certain extent. But it's not my job to sit in someone's story with them. My job is to help them see past their story. Yeah. So I can acknowledge that, yeah, from a certain vantage point, that's absolutely true. But that certain vantage point is not real. It's part of the illusion. So do we want to sit and we want to swim around in each other's illusions? For the next 26,000 years? Or is it time to kind of, you know, put our big boy pants on and step forward into the work, humble and willing to see the worst of the worst of ourselves? Because that's exactly what it takes. Now, let me lead into another thing. I wanted to talk about what I call third-party communication. And this is a really big deal. And so I felt like this is a good way to kind of move into this. If we go back to what we just looked at, we have a person who does have a personal experience with something. And so the person took the opportunity presented to then not in this scenario really give the experience, but we got it enough, you know, we have an understanding that this person has personal experience with this. So here's the thing. If you're reading it as an outsider who does not know this person, okay, what happens is you take that information in, and remember again that the lower mind is like, you've got this incredible receptacle that's like a huge memory bank on a computer, and it takes in all the information that's presented. So here, where everything is polarized, it's taking in both sides of everything, right? And then what it does is, at any given time, it can always go back into its database and pull out certain pieces of information that seem to be applicable at the time, right? And they'll pull it, and then it'll pull it forward, and it'll say, oh, look, I have proof here because this happened, and here it is, and now I can use it to prove to myself that this new thing that just came up has support, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's the thing. You guys are all going to hate me after today. Merry Christmas. Here's your Christmas gift, right? Here's the thing. The thing is that when you speak, let's say PLN and I are sitting here together, okay? And I start talking to her about another person that we both know. And let's say I start telling her some kind of a story where another person did something that I view to be bad, okay, lack of a better word. And now we're going to talk about it. I just did an incredible disservice to the person who is not present. And the thing is that whenever you speak of someone who is not present with you, the thing is that that person has no opportunity to present their own side of the story. They have no opportunity to defend themselves, right? And what ends up happening is the person that I'm speaking to, in this case PLN, just got her head filled with information from me about my personal experience, and we'll assume I had personal experience, with this other person. Now, let's keep in mind, it wasn't her experience, it was my experience. Now, because, you know, I'm her guide, she's most likely going to believe me, isn't she? Now, put yourself in this situation. You're talking to a friend about another person. Oh, did you know? You know, you're sitting at coffee at Starbucks, having a coffee with a friend, and they're like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe what Judy did this week with her boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. And it starts this whole thing. Now, the two of you are holding an opinion about another person or multiple people that you've got no business holding. Because first off, if you weren't there, how can you even attest to it, right? And secondly, just because I have one experience does not mean that you're going to have the same experience. And this is the thing that people love to use this as their excuse. Well, but other people agree that person's like that, you know? And they use that as their justifier, yeah, for being in judgment the way they are. It's okay for me to judge because everybody agrees, you know? He's like the worst boss ever. Everybody agrees. Is that right? You know, now if I didn't know anything about this person and I went into work for him, who's to say I wouldn't have a beautiful experience having him as my boss? If I have nothing to base anything on and I walk in fresh, you have no way of knowing the experience that I would have. Now, here's the thing. If this communication takes place now, I have this thing that sits in the back of my head about this person. And there's an energy that's built. So like in the, we'll go back to the original one. I'm sitting and talking with PLAN about this other person. Now we have a triangle and an energetic triangle that's built between the three of us. And it sits there. So when we're around this other person, maybe it's just PLAN is around this other person is going to feel that energy. And she won't understand why. Or he. Okay? There's an energy that's there that has been created. And it is very real. And the other person will feel it and they won't know what they're feeling. They can't make sense of it. And they probably won't even be conscious of it. But they'll feel it. You can't not feel it. Okay? People who are highly sensitive will feel it. But we all know the experience of maybe walking into a room where people have been talking about you and you walk in and you can sense it. It's like, ooh, something's not right, you know? Okay, so that's kind of a more in-your-face example. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. And it can just be very subtle. But that's what's going on. Now, here's the thing. If in the example with me and PLAN, if I had said something about this person and I said, yeah, you know, you just wait and see. She's a liar. I mean, she lies a lot. And you'd never know it, right? Guess what happens? Now, you got PLAN sitting over there. She's all love and light, right? She's all love and light. So in her world, she's going to be like, oh, I wouldn't judge her. I would never judge her. Of course I wouldn't, right? Yeah, right. Because here's what happens. As soon as PLAN is around this other person again, or is in a room where someone's talking about this person again, guess what she's looking for? She's looking for proof of the fact that this person is a liar. And if you're looking for something, I guarantee you, you will find it. Mind is very, very good at coloring your perception so that you see what you want to see. She wants to see this person as a liar now. Okay? She doesn't want to prove that I'm wrong. She wants to prove that I'm right. Okay, and you have to take into account she's got an attachment to me, right? She has her own concept of what it means that I'm her guide. I wouldn't lie to her, right? So if I've said it, it must be true. And it would not be a good thing if she could prove that I was wrong, because what does that say about me now? And what does it say about my capacity to be her guide and whatever else, right? So she's literally looking for it. And it is... making a very, very strong impact on how she is perceiving her reality. Okay? This is highly, highly damaging stuff. And we do it every day. What is it to be a good friend, right? The collective would agree that to be a good friend means you're there to listen to someone when they have a problem, be a shoulder for them to cry on. Really, you know, if your best friend comes to you and she's having troubles with her boyfriend and she lays it all on you, you know, is that really a good thing? It's not a good thing for you, I promise you. I promise you, it is not. There aren't, until you achieve the state of consciousness where you truly are detached from the personal self, and you are fully capable of seeing the divine in others all the time, you cannot listen to that kind of stuff and have it not impact you. You just can't. You just can't. So this is something to really pay attention to. What is, you know, the trash magazines, right? Star Magazine, is it like one of the People and those kind of magazines?
Inquirer.
Oh, the Inquirer. I want to know. That's right. I want to know. They are just terrible. They're just terrible. I mean, these poor celebrities, you know, and people love to justify, you know, talking about celebrities because, oh, well, you know, they wanted to be famous. So therefore, you know, they deserve it. Oh, my goodness. Are we really? Is that really who we are? You know, never mind that we could celebrate them for their gifts and, you know, applaud them for what they have done and try and stand in their shoes and say, wow, it must be incredibly difficult to not be able to move freely in the world. It must be incredibly difficult. Like all you know, think about this for just a second. You love to, like, you know, bash on Justin Timberlake or something, right? think for a second. Here you have a person that all he ever wanted to do was sing, right? It's his passion, and he knows he's here to do it. And with it comes this horrible burden that he, you know, he can't be himself anymore. He's kind of, you know, locked into this sentence of, well, yeah, you can sing, but it comes with this terrible thing. You can't go out in public anymore, you know, without being followed by people all the time. They're looking for like the worst picture they could possibly take of you so they can stick it on the cover of the Inquirer, right? And then have everybody in the country talking about you. Oh my God, Kirstie Alley gained weight again, you know, like whatever it is. It's just ridiculous. But that's what, you know, that's what we've come to. The poor president of the United States, oh my God, he can't catch any slack from anybody, right? You know, I mean, really. And I love this, you know, because people, I love the hypocrisy in Christianity, because people love to call themselves Christians, but yet they're the first ones, a lot of times, from what I see over and over and over again, they can be the first ones to just cast that stone. Boom. Right? And we're called to do more than that. It's not serving anything other than supporting your own sense that in that moment when you say something hurtful about another person and they're not there, whether if it's someone you know, someone you don't know, you've never even met, in that moment, it serves one purpose. And the purpose is it makes you feel better about yourself. And you have to do it at the expense of another. And that, from where I stand, is heartbreaking. You know, I watch it with my children. I've told you, I have 3 children, 9, 10, and 13. And it's only been very recently that I started seeing the little egos becoming more manipulative with each other. And I'm watching what's going on with them. And there are times where I just want to shake them, because they just can't see what they're doing to each other. And it's so frustrating to stand on my end. I understand exactly what's going on. But when you're in a space where you love, you just love, and you see people across from you who love each other just as deeply, but they can't see it. Yeah. And so they do these hurtful things to each other. It can break your heart. You know, and bring you to tears. It's just, it can be really painful. It seems like the deeper you go in your work, the more you feel the pain of humanity. I mean, you feel the, you know, of course here everything, you've got to experience everything, right? So you go into states of incredible ecstasy, but at the same time, you can go as low as it gets, right? And that's why, I say this is not work for the faint of heart. Unless you're willing to sit in really deep pain at times, you can't do it. It's like the lower mind likes to become very numb, you know. TV's really good for that. Helps you kind of numb out, right? And the more, it's been actually, I'll share a little thing. It's been a beautiful thing. I watched my husband very recently move through an experience that I had, you know, had some time ago. And it was so beautiful to see it in him. We were watching we don't have TV, but we do have Netflix. And I think we were watching a movie, or it may have been like a serial TV show that, you know, is probably 8 years old and we're just now seeing it. And something happened and a person was murdered on the program. And I actually, you know, my husband's very much a man's man, right? And I watched him turn his head from the TV and he goes, I just can't stand to see people killed anymore, you know? And I just had to smile because I was like, I know. I remember that, moving through that very, very well, where it just hurts to see it. And of course, you know, you're watching a TV show, you know that, quote unquote, it's not real, right? It's just a TV show. But it's like there's something that is so, it hits you so deep, you know, that it's like you just can't tolerate it anymore. So that's a beautiful thing to witness. And if you've moved through that, then, you know, embrace it, because it's good. You know, we're here to really honor all life, I don't care what it looks like. You know, I don't care if it's an ant. You're here to honor it. And who are you to decide what should be the fate of any sentient being? And remember, everything is conscious, right? Everything. That was like a really big thing for me when I hadn't even started my work yet when this happened. I had gone, I think I told you in the beginning, I had met Tony Reyes at a hotel room, and I went, maybe it was like the second time I had gone back to see her, and she made that comment to me that everything is conscious. And I was like, and it hit me. I was like, holy crap. Like, what is she saying? And I remember looking at the bed in the room, and it had a nice like gold, like an Afghan or something, like laying on over the, at the end of the bed. And I looked at her, and I remember putting my hand out, and I said, so you mean to tell me that this is conscious? And she said, absolutely. And I was like, oh my God. Like, oh my gosh. Because we move through our world thinking that just people, you know, we exalt ourselves that we're, you know, we're this certain place, and then the animals are below us. And, you know, and there is a level of truth to that, just as far as the evolution of what's going on. But then we think of all of these things around us as being nothing but matter, right? And it's just not true. Everything we experience as matter is built of elemental consciousness. And it is conscious, you know, and that's why I loved with Toy Story, right? With the toys that come to life, and they, well, not that they come to life, but they're living, and the people don't witness it, you know, and then you realize, so the kid picks up a toy and just like chucks it against the wall, and it's like, but that toy just experienced that, right? I love that movie. I think it's really powerful. And actually, so when you really start to allow that to sink into your consciousness, it's like you find that you walk much softer in the world. And, you know, the things that you lay your hands on, it's all sacred, right? And that's the thing that's kind of missing here. You know, in the illumined worlds, everything is sacred. It's just, there's no better word for it. It's sacred because we know all of it to be God. And here, it's been the exact opposite, you know. And so there are collective levels of pain going on that are very, very deep. You know, in the animal kingdom, there's, you know, you have animals, especially like domesticated animals, they depend on us to care for them. And, you know, how many times have we been terrible stewards with animals? And that pain gets registered, you know, and it's sitting out there. And there are some of you who do transmutation around that. I've done that myself. It was horribly painful to move through the energy of that when you feel it. I mean, gut-wrenching, crying, you know, that sobbing that you can't stop. And but I remember feeling it so strongly that it's like there's this level of pain, even in the animal kingdom. And they're here to serve us, you know, and they're trapped here with us, not because of anything they did. Right? So it's important to gain an understanding of these different levels that are going on that people are oblivious to. And, you know, is it necessary to have them all? No, but I think it serves its purpose, you know. Like with Archangel Michael, I mean, do you have the understanding that, you know, Michael chose to be here with his sword until the very last soul is freed, right? The very last soul. And at that point, that beautiful sword of his won't be needed anymore. It's here to serve its purpose here, but it's not needed outside of here. But he's, you know, he's like a, I love the term prisoner of love, because that's exactly what it is, you know. And that's the point. He's here to serve every single one of us every day. And he doesn't get paid much attention most of the time, right? But it doesn't alter his level of commitment or his level of love for humanity. You know, he sees with compassionate eyes that you're looking at a huge group of individuated consciousnesses that have completely forgotten who they are. Right. So you see past all this stuff. That's why I keep saying see past the personal stories, because it's not real. I don't care who the person is. You know, if you have someone who is part of your family and the person annoys you, you find the person annoying. Oh, they're so negative. Every time they come over, all I do is complain. Okay, first of all, you're the one complaining right now and being negative. Can I point that out? Right? See that. That's important. That's important. Oh my gosh, I'm complaining about the fact that they complain. How am I any different? Oh, I don't do it as much. Okay, so that's okay, right? That's what people love to do. You point it out to them. Oh, but I'm not like that normally. Okay. So, and is there anything else that I needed to hit tonight? It was important. It was really important to me that I get to that third party thing. I really want you. Here's your homework. Your homework is I want you to pay attention this week and how many times you get pulled into a conversation that concerns someone other than yourself and the person you're with. Okay? Because it's not a good thing. It's karmic, people. And this is the stuff that we are all working to burn off, not to create more of. I would highly recommend for you when you get someone around you who wants to do that to excuse yourself from the conversation. Or better yet, be a true light bearer and bring it to their attention that what they're doing is not cool, you know?
Can I just ask one question? Because I just want to make it clear that a lot of people only think, quote unquote, gossiping mm-hmm. is wrong, for lack of a better word. But this goes beyond gossip. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, this is can be just kind of daily communication. Mm-hmm. You know, what people don't realize is that, you know, all the information you get, it has an immediate impact on the reality that you are living and the reality that we're all collectively experiencing. And this can even go, you know, you could take it to like a person who gets sick and goes to the doctor and the doctor says, you've got this, right? Now we just took that piece of information in. Right. Oh, well, it's true because we know doctors have done all the scientists have done all the studies and this is what leads to that and blah, blah, blah. Now there's this whole story that's built up. Well, it's no wonder that the story usually plays out in a certain way. Right. Because the collective is holding it as true. It's holding it as reality. Well, how is it possible then that some people defy the odds and magically tumors disappear, never to return again? Right? If it's possible for one, why on earth would we think that it's not possible for all or even probable? Right? I mean, you weren't created as a fallen being. That's not who you are. This is the perfect segue into our song at the end of the night here. We are here, you know, the Christ is present right now in every single one of you. The Christ, the Christ, not a person, right? The Christ. It is that consciousness that knows itself to be one with all, knows itself to be God, the one. And that's what we're here to bring into this polarized world so that we can transcend the need that has been sitting there to have this chaotic environment to experience, because it's just not necessary and it's not who you are. It never has been. It never will be. You know, none of it ever really happened. You've all heard me say that over and over and over again. At some point for each one of you, that's going to register and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, she's absolutely right. You know? So we're going to end the night with a song. The song is O Holy Night. So those of you who are of the Christian faith will know it. And most of you who aren't will know it too, because it's so popular. And the song, you know, don't think of it in the terms that you are thinking of it, you know, traditionally. We're not thinking about a baby. It's not about looking at the baby. It's about the birth that we're seeing now, even, of Christ consciousness on this planet. Every one of you is going to wake up every one of you is going to wake up. And that is the birth of Christ consciousness here in manifestation, in physicality. So let's look at this song as a meditation tonight. I want you to just sit in meditation and allow the energy, because it's powerful, allow the energy just to flood you tonight. And then move forward, knowing yourself to be the Christ in form. And do your homework over the week. And we'll be back with you next Thursday night. So much love to you.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder bends a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices. Oh, night divine, when Christ was born. Oh, night divine, oh, night, oh, night divine. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy in grateful chorus raise, let all within us praise his holy name. Christ is the Lord, let ever, ever praise me.
Noel!
You are divine.